Bandwidth for this podcast is brought to you by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com. This is We Have Communicators, episode 169, recorded on January 18th, 2013. Enjoy! All right, it's time for We Have Communicators, the show that covers all things iOS and beyond. I'm Michael Johnston, and with me, as usual, is Jeff Gamet from the Mac Observer. Hey, Jeff, how's it going?
It's going great, and you sound like things are going fine for you, Michael.
Yes, quite well.
Excellent.
And Adam Christensen's also here from the MacCast. Hey, Adam.
Hey, how you doing?
Pretty good. How are you?
All right. Firing up the backup recording because I just realized I forgot to start it.
Oh, that's important. So far, I have this part, so you don't have to worry about that part that you didn't record.
Oops.
That's cool. So, you know that Pebble watch?
Yes.
How long ago did that start? Was that 2 years ago?
A year and a half ago?
Yeah.
Maybe? So it was supposed to come out in September, and then I got pushed to, was the beginning of November?
I'm not sure. I just kept getting pushed out. Further and further. But it was one of the most popular Kickstarter projects.
Yes, and it's shipping January 23rd.
Yeah. Did either of you back it?
Nope.
But I did get to see it in person.
Oh, yeah? How was it? Did you see that at CES?
Yes, I did.
Okay.
And it was really cool to see. And it's the first watch-type device that I've seen that I think totally, the guys totally get how to use it as an iPhone accessory.
Cool.
It looked good. And the fact that they have an SDK now so that other people can write other apps for the watch.
Yeah.
It's really cool.
So it uses the display is e-ink, so it doesn't use a lot of battery.
Right.
And what sorts of things will it do with an iPhone?
Well, it will send you notifications it will grab notifications from your iPhone. So when you get texts and emails, stuff like that, that will all show up on the display. And you can't even read messages and emails right on the display and decide if you need to reply.
Cool.
Yeah, so that's cool. And it has if then that support.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. And so the example that they showed was, if it starts to snow in Las Vegas, let me know. or if the temperature drops below a certain point, it was something like that. And so it used if and then that to get data from like Wonderground or something, and then it would push a customized message through the iPhone to the Pebble.
Nice.
Yeah, and with the way the SDK, or with the way they're envisioning people using the SDK as they improve it and add more features, it will be a system or a tool so that people can make really cool add-ons that really enhance the functionality of your iPhone without having to take your iPhone out of your pocket.
Yeah. You can control your music with it, right?
Yes.
Can you select from your music, or is it just kind of a previous next thing?
You can select from your music.
So you can scroll through it, and obviously you can't type, but...
Right, but like an old school iPod where
right.
You can go through the menus, yeah. And it has some, I'll call it gesture support, because it has a, I guess it's a gyroscope. And So they were showing how you could do stuff like tap on the watch in a certain way and it would activate the backlighting.
Ooh, that's cool.
And it has an ambient light sensor, so it'll adjust how bright the backlight is for you.
Nice.
And
does it actually have backlight or front light? Just like a light. Because it's e-ink, right? So it's reflective, not transmissive.
So it must be a front light then.
Yeah. Okay. Sorry.
Yeah. That's okay.
Unless there's some other new technology.
A backlight.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I didn't actually play with the light, so I couldn't see where it was coming from.
Gotcha.
They built in features, like hardware features, that aren't actually being used. But what they said they wanted to do was future-proof the Pebble. So they built in hardware that over time, as they roll out different software updates and third-party developers start writing new apps, this hardware is there ready to go. So instead of people having to buy a new watch every year or two, all they have to do is wait for software updates and the watch gets new features. So I thought that was pretty cool.
Cool. So you did go to CES. What other stuff? You have a couple notable things that you saw at CES?
The new Lego Mindstorms. That was really cool. You can program it through your iPhone. And
are those robotic Legos?
Yes. Yeah, the robotic Lego kits.
Okay, cool.
And the kit isn't out yet. It comes out in a couple months. But yeah, you can program it with your iPhone. And
I think it's the summer.
Oh, is it the summer? Okay.
I'll check while you talk.
Yeah, that's very possible. There's so many coming soon things. I can't keep track of what's going to pop out when. So anyhow, the new Mindstorm kit, along with iPhone support, it has new sensors built into the main module, so it can support more autonomous functions. So it can learn its surroundings, and you can have it follow other objects or look for obstacles, and it looks really cool. And the fact that you're not tied to a desktop or laptop computer to program it, that's really cool.
They're saying it's worse than I thought. They're saying fall of 2013.
Oh, geez. All right. Well, it's really cool, but I'm certainly not really as excited as I was.
Well, I totally want them. It gives me time to save because I think the kit's like $350.
Yeah, it's not cheap.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, $349.99 is the price point. And I thought it was this summer. I guess it's late summer, maybe like August. Does that count as fall? Or is fall's really like September, right?
I think. Isn't fall September? Yeah.
Something like that. Yeah, I guess that makes sense.
I have the current version. You know, you program with like the Mac, and it kind of stinks because it's still like an Air application mostly, at least for like the documentation.
Oh, that's horrible.
Yeah, or it uses Flash, you know, and so kind of broke when I upgraded to Mountain Lion, so I haven't played with it in a while.
Yeah,
that really sucks.
Okay, yeah. Was there anything else, or do you want to move on?
How about trends real quick?
Sure.
Everyone wanted to make sure that whatever device or product they were pushing had some sort of iPhone integration. And people were going out of their way to make sure that you knew whatever it is that they made. Works with the iPhone.
Nice. Was it just iPhone, or was it Android and iPhone?
Everyone said iPhone. And okay. If I asked, what about Android? They would say, most places would say, if they had any Android support, they would say, oh, yeah, it supports the Galaxy S3.
Huh.
Kind of in passing. So it wasn't so much we support iPhone and Android. It was we support iPhone and the Samsung Galaxy S3.
Interesting.
Yeah,
so it was a specific phone? So not even just Android Jelly Bean. It was like, the S3.
It was the S3.
Wow, yeah. That's interesting.
And I got that at most every place that sold cases, assuming they had any Android cases. It would just be for the S3.
Oh, well, that makes sense. On the case front, that certainly makes sense because you want to hit the most popular form factor.
Yeah,
right. But other places, it was, we support the iPhone.
Well, that is interesting to hear, especially since we heard this week that Apple reportedly, according to the Wall Street Journal, has cut down their part orders for the iPhone 5, which has caused a lot of people to think, oh, geez, the iPhone 5 is doing terribly. Didn't they say that some people reported that they cut it in half, the component
orders?
That
was the Wall Street Journal that said that.
That was the Wall Street Journal that said that.
Okay. But
so parts orders that people have been making up have now been cut in half, and that's a problem for Apple.
Well, yeah, and I think it's way overblown is the point.
Yeah, I think it's way overblown. That's where I was going.
Yeah.
I think what happened is that Apple has been able to streamline some of their parts supply chain. And I think that assuming there were part orders that were canceled, it may very well be that Apple's transferring those orders to other companies too.
Sure. But we also can't ignore the fact that we just came out of the holiday season.
Right. But we're talking about orders that will be for next quarter, not for product that's been shipping this quarter.
Right. But again, wouldn't it make sense that you wouldn't need as much as you did last quarter?
Right. And I'm doing horrible with making words come out of my head today. So what I was trying to say is the December quarter, we always expect the numbers for parts to be higher. The March quarter, we expect those numbers to be lower because that's how it works. We're not in the holiday quarter anymore.
Right. That, and they also feel that they were a little bit over-aggressive in terms of what they thought they would need for the holiday quarter due to yield problems and things like that.
Yeah, and I think it was Maynard today said that another problem that Apple was facing, which was out of their control, was that cell service providers refused to offer good deals for current iPhone owners to upgrade to the new model. And that kept some people from buying.
Yeah, but I think ultimately, haven't we seen predictions that iPhone 5 sales were higher than any previous iPhone?
Yes, and we're also seeing people saying that iPhone 5 sales are not as good as other models.
So conflicting.
You see both a little conflicted things there. Mm-hmm. You know, I think you guys are right though on the parts front. And the other thing I was reading is, you know, basically Apple had sort of ramped up orders because they were worried about, like you were saying, I think, Michael, supply shortages and stuff like that. And so this is just, some analysts are saying this is just an adjustment of that now that they've got that kind of under control. The other thing, though, is that I think they launched in so many countries right out of the gate that the curve for the iPhone 5 is going to be way front-loaded anyway, right? So most people who wanted an iPhone 5 have gotten an iPhone 5 at this point. And now we're going to see a slowing down, and it's Apple just adjusting for that too, trend moving forward. And you know, there's now all this rumor that we're going to have a mid-release new iPhone. So sales are going to trail off. It's going to be, you know, you're going to see iPhone numbers drop off, I think, a lot more quickly with this version of the iPhone than we did, say, with a 4 or a 4S or something like that.
Yeah. Now, that is another interesting thing because there are rumors that we're going to see a new iPhone sometime in the middle of this year or earlier. Is it earlier or middle?
I've been hearing spring.
Okay, spring. Now, for a lot of people that, and we've touched on this before, that has upset them. Same with the rumors that we're possibly going to be seeing a new iPad and iPad mini in March. But, you know, it's interesting. I was watching a few older Apple keynotes recently, back when, right after Steve Jobs came back and the iMac had just come out. And they were refreshing all of their product lines every 9 months or something like that. They're doing a lot of refreshing just constantly. They weren't waiting every for 1 year to go by before they released another product. And I think that it makes more sense, at least in the iPhone or in the phone sector and in the tablet sector, honestly, with all the competition now, to not wait an entire year to bring new things to market when you have all this competition going on. If you can up that release cycle, then I think it helps them. And the way it's been set up in the past with the yearly or 18-month release cycle, it it has kind of conditioned consumers to want to get the newest product every time it comes from Apple. But if they do shift to a more regular release cycle that is less than a year, then it makes sense that not everybody is going to update every single time. Maybe they'll wait 1 or 2 or 3 release cycles before they get the next thing. I know I did with the iPhone 4. I was pretty happy with my iPhone 4 until about the time that the iPhone 5 came around.
You know, a faster release cycle creates what I call the Adobe effect, which has nothing to do with Flash. This is for people that use Creative Suite. So Adobe releases a new version of Creative Suite about once a year, and people skip a version. And so you always have this upgrade cycle where it's for users, it's actually a 2-year upgrade cycle, and you're skipping a version every single time you upgrade. So depending on when you bought in to Creative Suite, that determines your 2-year cycle. And if Apple goes to a shorter, consistently shorter upgrade cycle window for the iPhone, I totally see that happening. We'll have the majority of people, I think, will end up skipping versions of the iPhone on a regular cycle.
Yeah, and it's already happening now. I mean, I was talking today with a friend who still has an iPhone 4, and I asked him, why don't you have an iPhone 5? Why don't you want one? And he said, I just don't really care. And I said, well, are you thinking about getting an Android phone? And he's like, oh, geez, no, I wouldn't get an Android phone. I'm just fine with my iPhone 4. And I think that there's been a lot of speculation that people are not upgrading from their iPhone 4s, or there's not enough reason to upgrade from the iPhone 4 to the iPhone, from the iPhone 4S to the iPhone 5, and that indicates that there is an issue with the iPhone 5, or that it's a dud, or it's a flop. And I don't think that that's the problem at all. I think there is a specific group of people who want to upgrade every single time there's a new phone, and those guys are crazy, and they happen to be us a lot of times. But
so we say crazy with love.
Exactly. But at the same time, there are a lot of people who are just happy with what they have. Because when you got the iPhone 4, when the iPhone 4 first came out, it was a great phone, and it still is a great phone. Maybe it's getting a little slower with the newer operating systems, but for a lot of people, that's fine. Also, the other side of that is the contracts are 2 years long. Uh-huh. But at the same time, people are all over the place these days with when they bought into the iPhone. So it's not it's not when they first released the iPhone that everybody needs a new phone. It doesn't come along that same point in time for every person. So having a more frequent release cycle that better matches the other companies in the industry allows for more reason to stick with Apple or move to Apple, as opposed to look at Samsung and say, oh, well, I mean, Samsung just updated their phone and this one looks really awesome, and Apple hasn't updated their phone in 10 months or whatever. I think I'll just get the Samsung. I think it provides more opportunities for Apple to keep people or gain people.
Okay, so I see your point, and I understand what you're saying. At the same time, I had an interesting conversation with Ken Ray, and he brought up this question, and it seems to me like you could make an argument that some of the stuff that Apple's doing and moving to a more rapid release cycle and doing some of the other sort of changes they've been making seem to be in some ways bowing to the competitive pressure and also to analyst pressure to put new devices and new phones out more quickly. And what's weird about that is, just like you were saying with your friend, there's a whole group of people that really don't care, right? They're like, I don't need to have the latest and greatest phone. And they're only ever buying a phone when their contract comes up for renewal, maybe every 2 years. So it does kind of make you question the rationale or the reasoning behind stepping up the release cycle. And I think you make a good point, though. Is it really just so that when the time comes when your friend is going to go into the store and he's looking at, you know, a 3-month-old Android device versus a 10-month-old iPhone, he doesn't pick the Android going, well, that's newer, so I want, you know, better latest technology. Is that really why Apple's doing it, or are they doing it because they're bowing down to this sort of external pressure, which they've never done before?
Well, it's also a very superficial thing
in their philosophy. Sorry.
It's also a very superficial thing for them to do.
Right.
If that's the motivation, if it's not for the benefit of consumer, then it is very uncharacteristic.
And if that is the case, then that does become concerning. But if it's just, look, the iPhone's become a mature product. We do want to make sure that when a customer's going in that they're getting the latest and greatest technology. We have the ability to deliver that. And I do personally feel and hope that it's the latter. I hope it's the kind of thing where, you know, like with the iPad mini or the iPhone 4S, they're going, well, we don't have to have these big, huge generational changes. But if we can suddenly get better displays for an iPhone or an iPad and we can roll those into production, why wouldn't we want to update so that what we're shipping into market is the latest and greatest best technology that we can deliver at the price point that we have?
Right.
You know, I think that's ultimately a good thing. It's not something that Apple's done in the past, which is why I think myself and other people are sort of like, why are they making these changes? Is this really because they just want to make sure that they're getting the best product out there, or is there some other reasoning going on? And the hope is that they're not doing it because, oh my gosh, we're getting so much negative press and the analysts are on us and the investors are on us saying, well, you're not up to date and Android's kicking your butt. And if that's the reason they're doing it, then I think that's the wrong reasoning. If it's something else, if it's more to the point of, hey, we just want to make sure that, you know, we're putting the best products out there, then, you know, and that consumer behavior has changed. You know, as the product matures, the iPhone doesn't stand on being the iPhone alone, right? There is Android phones out there that are starting to compete, especially the Samsung stuff. And Apple probably wants to make sure, just like you're saying, that when a customer goes in the store, they're not losing out because, well, this one has a Retina display and that one doesn't. Or this one has the latest, you know, graphics chips and Apple's doesn't, because Apple only updates their phone every 12 to 18 months.
Right.
And I really don't know what the answer is. You know, I'm asking the question, but I really don't have an answer.
Yeah.
I'd be curious to get your guys' take.
So I think the answer is, if Apple can roll out hardware updates for their mobile lineup quicker, then it becomes more difficult for their competition to match or surpass what they're doing. And, right, and it doesn't matter how quickly you update or how slowly you update your product line. You're going to piss off part of your consumer base, because there are people that want something faster, and there are people that think whatever they have is fine, and they don't see a need to upgrade, and they get pissed off thinking, well, now I'm being forced into new products faster than I want.
Okay, and then the second part, the follow-up question to you is, why weren't they doing that from the get-go? And this is what I think a lot of people want to know. Why weren't they always doing that? What has changed? And I think I explained my opinion, but just to sort of reiterate, I think my reason why they're changing is, in the past, they really didn't have the kind of competition they have now.
Yeah. I certainly think that they're paying attention to the competition, but whether or not they're superficially bowing to the idea of needing to update to compete is the real question.
That's the question, right? Yeah. I mean, what do you think, Jeff? I don't think this is bowing down to just to compete. I think it is just coincidentally the timing has come out where the iPhone is now such a mature product and Android has gained enough development-wise and with the hardware manufacturers that it's a viable competitor. So I think those two things together make the timing make sense. And I think it's something very similar to what they did with MP3 players and the iPod, right? They had to start stepping up iPod. I don't know if they actually stepped at the release cycles, but they definitely diversified the line to sort of hit those price points that they needed to hit. But they didn't do it until there was serious competition in other areas. And I think the same thing's happening with the iPhone.
Right.
I think so. And I think that parts, supplies, that whole part of the system has been improving over the past couple of years. And so now it's at a point where it's easier for Apple to do these faster upgrade cycles.
Yeah, and I think consumers will get used to the change. I think it's hard on us, you know, diehard fans who've been in the Apple community and known and been able to rely on this sort of yearly 18-month to 18-month release cycle. But I really think that's just the way technology has gone. It's changing, and we're going to get used to this new cycle and just know that, you know, I'm resolving myself to the fact that I'm not going to probably get the next iPad mini if it comes out in 6 months. I'm going to probably stick to my yearly, you know, buying cycle unless there's some huge change. But the other thing I think that we're going to see with these releases is they're really just going to be minor updates. You know, like the next, if they do update the iPad mini, I think it's just a screen update. I don't expect any of the other specs to probably change.
And, you know, the spec I could see changing would be a faster processor.
Slightly faster processor, maybe, yeah. But yeah, it's going to be eaten up by driving the display. So I don't think performance-wise, I don't know that the next generation mini is going to outperform the current iPad mini that's out there right now. So, and same thing on the, you know, what's going to be in the iPhone 5S? I mean, if it's, especially if it's, you know, NFC, unless Apple does something on the software side that's particularly revolutionary, that has almost no appeal to me.
Yeah, and NFC is the new bag of hurt for Apple, I think.
Yeah.
It's, you know, it's one of those gimmicky technologies that I think is being used in a lot of gimmicky ways. I guess it's cool that you have that in your phone for the point that maybe somebody just finds something useful to do with it. But Apple has always historically been, let's see the useful application and then integrate the technology, not right, the other way around.
Yeah. Yes. Apple is not doing the Samsung thing. Apple is not Samsunging products. How's that sound?
Right. Right. The fingerprint scanner is the other one that's being thrown out there, right?
Yeah.
In the home button.
Yeah. And maybe. The only reason I toss a maybe in there is because Apple did buy that company that owns a lot of the really popular fingerprint technology.
Mm-hmm.
But that company also does a lot of other things, so that may not be why Apple bought them.
But for me, these aren't must upgrade features. These are cool, you know, little additional features that could integrate into the product. But I guess I reserve judgment until I know how those technologies are being used by Apple, and if they really are, you know, game changing, then it could probably drive me to upgrade. But you know, I can't financially keep up with a 6 month upgrade cycle. It's hard. It's been hard enough to do it on a year upgrade cycle. And certainly if AT&T is not going to step up subsidizing my phone. But then we have the other thing where, you know, I think Verizon isn't, T-Mobile's already said we're not subsidizing phones anymore. Or as we move forward, we're not going to be subsidizing phones like the iPhone. I think that's their new plan. And Verizon is supposedly seriously kind of looking at that and considering that for future products too, which that's going to be a whole interesting paradigm shift for consumers if that really takes off as a new trend.
Yeah, well, that's so European because the whole subsidy thing in Europe, it's not a prevalent thing like it is here.
Yeah, but I don't know if consumers are ready to consign themselves to paying $600, $900 for a cell phone.
Well, when the original iPhone came out, how many of us lined up and spent $600 on it?
True, I didn't.
Okay. All of us except you, Adam.
I did. I certainly did.
Yeah, I didn't do it because it was just too much. And I don't know. I guess you'll get used, again, I guess you'll get used to it if that's the way everything goes. We'll just adapt. But, you know, it may also start eating into margins that Samsung and Apple are going to be able to pull on their devices, because I do think it's going to put off a number of consumers. And that may be another driving factor for some of the rumors we're hearing for Apple to more diversify the line and have cheaper alternatives.
I don't see the cheaper thing happening.
Me neither. I don't personally either, but I mean, if that's the way if the cell phone companies stop doing subsidies, it may force companies like Apple and Samsung to have to do that, because there is going to be a certain segment of the market that is going to be like, there is no way I'm paying $600 for a cell phone.
You know, for that segment, instead of Apple making cheap phones, I can see them figuring out a way to make their current model work for that. Meaning you have whatever the current phone model is, and then the two generations behind it at lower price points.
Well, it's funny you say that, because I'm reading the specs, the rumored specs for this, you know, cheaper iPhone with a plastic case.
Right.
Right. And I'm looking it over and I'm going, well, that's a 3GS. Right. It's a non-retina screen. It sounds like the difference is it's a 4-inch screen versus a 3.5, but okay, whatever. So 4-inch non-retina screen, no LTE, 3G, and a plastic case. Isn't that an iPhone 3GS?
Yeah, that's an iPhone 3GS. It's an iPhone 3G if you take out the digital compass.
Well, so if it's slow.
Why couldn't they? They could easily build something like that, and they just respin up the iPhone 3G, 3GS production, and you've got a $99 iPhone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There you go.
So what was the deal with that story anyway? So there were a couple stories stemming from, what was the original reason, the idea of a lower cost, bigger screen iPhone? Where did that come from?
Go ahead, Jeff.
No, go ahead, Adam.
I was just going to say, as far as I understand it, there's two fronts. One is just to compete with a lot of the lower cost smartphones that are out on the market, so to kind of enter that price point area. But probably the bigger driving factor would be gaining more in emerging markets, specifically places like China.
Right.
And we do know that Tim Cook was over,
you
know,
talking, phone markets.
Yeah, talking to China Mobile, which they don't have iPhones in yet. And, you know, subsidies and all those sorts of things don't go on. So for those consumers, to reach the most consumers in those markets, you need to hit a lower price point. And so I think that's a lot of the driving factor, but it's typically not something that Apple does. And, you know, even I think Phil Schiller came out and said, we're not going to do a cheaper iPhone. And I even commented on my show, you know, there's a lot of semantics involved in there.
Sure.
So there's a big difference between cheap iPhone
and inexpensive.
And inexpensive or a cheaper model, yeah.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, I think another key factor that's played into this whole notion is the rumor mill and publications like DigiTimes. So citing their anonymous supply chain sources. And so they'll toss a little thing out, like Apple is working with some specific vendor for parts, or they're not buying this part from this company anymore. And then you get analysts and other people that start weaving full tapestries out of that one little thread. And then you get stuff like ran in the Wall Street Journal, where you have people saying, okay, so Apple has cut their parts orders by 50%, and it's because of weak iPhone 5 sales. And they have nothing to back that up.
Yeah. I mean, it doesn't surprise me that iPhone sales are going to start to trend lower in general.
And especially right now.
Yeah.
Because we're post-holiday season. This is historically the soft sales quarter for Apple's iPhones.
Yeah. But I mean, just you know, as an aside, just looking at my friends and relatives and people that I know, almost everybody I know who ever wanted an iPhone now has one, you know, and it might not be a 5, it might be a 4 or 4S or something like that. But I think we're just reaching that point. You know, that's what I was talking about earlier about the maturity of the product line. It's people have the phone that they want and they're not clamoring to get them. Like a couple of years ago, I would ask people, they're like, oh, I totally want an iPhone. My next phone's going to be an iPhone. I think we've kind of reached that point. So that's why I think we are seeing Apple change some of the things like the release cycle, considering diversifying the product line. And I think we will see that in 2013. I don't know if the rumors that we're hearing are going to come true, but definitely they're going to do something to help juice sales and keep the sales running. But we're not going to see the astronomical numbers like we were, because they're running out of customers. You know, people who wanted to get iPhones got iPhones, and they're going to continue to buy iPhones, but they're on contracts and their upgrade cycles are all off. And so you just the way it goes. And they're going to continue to lose market share to Android in terms of just sales numbers.
Right. But the market is growing overall. So yeah, they can continue to grow while losing market share. And I don't think everyone that wants an iPhone has one. And I know you're saying that just in a very general sense.
Yeah, I have a very limited circle that I'm pulling, and I'm willing to admit that.
Yeah, and so just to be clear, I'm not trying to put words in your mouth there, or talk you into a corner. But I think that the market for people that want to buy an iPhone is still really big. It's just, how does Apple get into the rest of that market? And some of that is just time, because people will get out of other contracts and then go to an iPhone, and or they have their new job, so they can afford to get their iPhone now, things like that. And then, of course, new markets like China. But see, I'm torn. Does Apple need to diversify the iPhone line more than it is? Meaning they just have multiple generations of models available.
Right.
Or do they need to make the plastic iPhone for certain markets? And I don't know.
Just to be clear, I'm not saying that. I'm just saying I think we're going to see them continuing to, you know, do something to make sure that they're hitting all the different price points and that they're reaching out to maybe consumer markets who aren't looking for the latest and greatest iPhone. But it's something they've already started, but it won't surprise me if, again, we don't see huge, huge numbers for every generation of the latest version of the iPhone. I think those numbers are not going to be as big as they have traditionally been over the past few years. And I think it's going to be because of things like, hey, we have a $99 option or a $49 option, and a lot of our consumers are opting for that, even though it's not the 5S. You know, they're buying a 4.
Right.
Sure.
So I think that increasingly into the future, you'll probably want to pay more attention to the overall iPhone sales.
Right. Not just iPhone 5S sales.
Yeah. And okay. And actually, that's something that Maynard in his report that came out this morning was emphasizing without saying that specifically. Because when he was talking about iPhone sales numbers for the quarter, he made a point to say it's really important that we watch what's happening with the iPhone 4 and 4S sales as well.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what you were just saying.
Mm-hmm. All right. So we have a lot more stuff to talk about. But before we get to that, I want to mention our sponsor this month, which is Squarespace at squarespace.com. If you don't know what Squarespace is, it is a beautiful and a wonderful way to build your own website, either web page based or blog based or galleries or a combination of all three. So many people have different needs, and Squarespace fills all of them. The way that it works is they have quite a few pre-made templates that are beautiful and can all be, you don't have to design any of them yourself, but you can go in there and choose one of the pre-made templates. And then once you've done that, you can go in, customize it with custom colors. You can click on a thing and say, I want it to be this color. I want all the links to be this. I want the background to be this. I want a picture here. Do all that stuff. Or if you're more interested in doing CSS, you can also change stuff with CSS. You can actually change the layout of the pages that you in the way that you want to make a totally custom website without having to do any FTP uploads or anything. It's all in the web browser for you to manage, and it's a great way to make a website. And they have pretty much just one plan. You can either get a year pricing or monthly pricing. So it's $8 a month. I'm sorry. There are two plans, $8 a month, or you can do $16 a month for the unlimited. Unlimited gives you unlimited pages and galleries and bandwidth and storage. The standard gives you 500 gigabytes of bandwidth and 20 pages along with galleries and blogs, which really aren't limited, and 2 gigabytes of storage, which is awesome. They also give you a free custom domain with your purchase. So you should check them out. It's squarespace.com/communicators, and use the coupon code WHC1 right now to get an extra 10% off when you're ready to purchase. So, but you can get a free 14-day trial. So all you got to do is go to squarespace.com/communicators, click on get started, and immediately you'll be launched into the templates. You can create your website, make it look awesome, see if you like it. It's really cool, especially for even for someone who does know a lot of programming, website programming, and can do it like myself. It's nice to not have to worry too much about that stuff. And they do all the hosting. You don't have to worry about WordPress updates or anything like that. Of course, it's not WordPress, but they do all their software updates themselves. So check it out, squarespace.com/communicators, and we thank them for their support of the show.
Yeah. I just built one of our sites. It's great when you just need to throw up a site really quick for something.
Yeah.
And you don't want to hassle with it. So we're doing a Disneyland day for Mac Geeks, Dave oh, Sparks cool. and I.
That is just so awesome.
And so we registered DisneyMacGeeks.com, and you can go there, and that's a Squarespace site. Because I had to get that up there. I had to get information out to people. Had a cool little map widget, so we could put a map so everybody can get directions. It just made it super easy, and it was up in, you know, minutes. I didn't have to spend 2 days building a website.
Yeah, they have lots of great tools built in, so you don't have to go and reinvent the wheel when you're creating your website.
Yeah.
That, and it's almost impossible to bring down, because they have such good server configuration. So you can be Doug or Reddited or whatever, and it doesn't, you don't have to worry about it. So check it out.
So I'm going to get my plug in on January 26th. A bunch of us are going to show up at Disneyland and hang out and just have a bunch of Mac Geeks at Disneyland. So if you're anywhere in that area and want to join us, go to DisneyMacGeeks.com for the details and how to sign up and all that fun stuff.
Cool. Oh, this is a nice website. You just threw it together too.
Yeah.
Awesome. All right. So what else do we have to talk about? AT&T has expanded their FaceTime coverage for everybody on a tiered data plan except for people on unlimited. So we did talk about AT&T.
Wow,
supposedly,
they really don't want people on unlimited
plan. They don't.
I know. Well, of course they don't. We've known that for a long time. And we did talk about a couple months ago, I think, that there was suspicion that they began allowing people on unlimited to do FaceTime over cellular. And for whatever reason, it must have been a glitch or something, but whoever got it, I assume, still has it. I never got it, and it doesn't work for me. I'm on an unlimited plan. So if you're not on unlimited and you have a FaceTime-capable phone, you should be able to do it over cellular. And does that count toward your data usage, correct?
Yes.
Okay. It's so cute how you had to ask, Michael.
Because I don't know.
Yeah.
because I don't get to
That's why they want it on the tiered plans and not the unlimited plans, because they know if you rely on it heavily on your low-grade tier plan, you're going to go over, and then you're going to upgrade.
Oh, yeah, because I know so many people who just FaceTime all the time.
Well, that's the other part of it, right?
You know what would be great is if...
And some people do, though. I mean, some people really do like that feature and really use that feature to stay in contact with friends and family, especially if you're in remote areas or, you know, if you have to be away for something like that. So,
Yeah.
You know, I always say that, and I sound like I say it flippantly, and I probably do say it more flippantly than I should, that nobody uses FaceTime. And I will get a ton of emails from people who say, I love FaceTime. I use it all the time. It's how I communicate with my wife and kids because I'm a business traveler. I'm going to weigh a lot. And, you know, it's so for the people who use it, it really is a invaluable feature.
Yeah.
So I'll throw that out there. I recognize that I personally don't use it. I don't like video chatting or conferencing in general.
I do like it. I don't use it a whole lot, but when I do want to use it, it works great because it's just one button.
Yeah.
You know, I can see where I would use it a lot. Had my nieces been given iPad minis for Christmas instead of Android tablets.
Oh, that's so sad.
Yeah. But
you can call them on Skype.
That's funny that you mentioned that because my brother's always been a PC guy. And the minute he got an iPad, he like FaceTimes me all the time now. So.
That's fun.
It is kind of cool because I get to see my nieces and nephews and stuff like that. So.
Yeah. And see, that is cool.
So did you guys see the story about how Apple is now locking screenshots for applications once they've been submitted to the App Store?
Yes. And it's unfortunate, but I totally get why they do it, because there's a handful of douche developers out there that screwed it for everyone.
Absolutely. So for those who don't know what's been going on, there have been applications that, of course, you have to submit your application to the App Store and have it approved by people there. And when you do that, you also have to have your screenshots attached to it. But as it is right now, and or maybe not anymore, I'm not sure when they changed it. January 9th is when they said they're going to lock it. So they're doing it right now. But the way it was before is you could change the screenshots. You could update your screenshots for your application, no problem, at any point. You could also, and I believe you can still update the text on your application. But what was happening is certain developers were posting nonsense applications. They were submitting them to the App Store. And then once they were approved, they would swap out the screenshots to look like something else. So they would dupe people into buying an application when it really wasn't what was depicted in the screenshots. So I can't imagine it would be too big of a deal for developers. I don't think that screenshots change that often. I know they do change occasionally between updates, but it's going to be more of a hassle because you're going to have to have everything set up ready to go, including your screenshots, when you do submit it to the App Store.
And all because some developers were totally gaming the system with screenshots.
Yeah. But I mean, that's what you got to do sometimes. So anything else you guys want to talk about, or should we move on to our picks? Well, there was one story that was interesting about the Apple looking to hire writers to enhance Siri and her personality particularly.
Really?
Did you not hear about that?
No, that's cool though.
Yeah, there was a job posting looking for someone who combines a love for language, wordplay, and conversation with demonstrated experience in bringing creative content to life within an intense technical environment. So...
That's cool.
And they did actually, I think they mentioned Siri specifically.
Siri's already got a pretty good attitude, but.
Yeah, you know. It's very, it doesn't always come out because, of course, it hasn't been written into it, but it'll be nice to have more of that. Honestly, I want to see more functionality out of Siri. I think that'll have to be one of the big things that we see in iOS 7.
That is probably the biggest on my wish list, is that Apple finally opens up the APIs and lets other applications integrate with that, because I think that's when Siri becomes truly powerful.
Yeah, and they also need to improve what they're doing with their current applications. You know, if you look at applications like, what is it, Fantastical,
mm-hmm.
with the amazing natural language stuff that they have in there, that you can just say dinner with Adam in Cupertino at 9 or whatever, and it'll just schedule it in there. Siri has that for the most part, but I think it can be extended.
Well, yeah, but I mean, I want to see it where I activate Siri and I say, add to Fantastical, and she would say, what do you want to add? And then I do my natural language thing and it puts it in.
Exactly.
It puts it in for me, yeah. You know, so those sorts of things. But certainly, yeah, expand what they can do with their own apps as well. But that's where I find most of the places where I'm limited is, you know, there's certain apps, like I can't play a podcast in I use Downcast for my podcast now.
Yeah, you have to say open, right? Downcast, and then while you're driving your car you have to then,
yeah, it's very bad,
yeah,
and dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, so
or Apple could fix their podcast app so I don't have to use Downcast. Hey,
well, looks like you're gonna stick with Downcast.
Yeah, there you go. All right, so Jeff, what's your pick this week?
My pick this week is, actually, I'm going with a game again.
I hope it's not my pick.
Well, is your game pick or your app pick this week Riven for the iPad?
No.
Oh, well, there you go. You're safe.
Okay.
So Riven, which was the follow-up or sequel to Myst, which back in the day was, they were just amazing games on the Mac. And then Myst was ported to the iPhone, and then a separate port was done for the iPad. And now Riven has been released for the iPad. And it's beautiful. The audio is great. And for those of us that loved playing Myst and Riven back in the day, I think this is a really good port to the iPad. It's really nice. It's like $5.
Six bucks. Yep. Riven for iPad. There's also an iPhone version too. So, Adam, what is your pick?
Are you doing Quento?
No.
Oh, good.
Then I'm actually doing Quento. One that's similar to what Jeff
Similar to
picked.
Quento?
No, what Jeff picked.
Oh, okay. So, I'm going to pick a game called Quento. And it is a... What seems like... And I thought was going to be like a simple math game, because one of the complaints that I had heard about it was basically you're given this grid of numbers, and then up at the top you are given a number to basically create an equation for that will equal that number. So up at the top it might say you need to have number 5, and then you have this grid with 5 numbers on it and then addition and subtraction operations. And so, you know, if it was, say it was 2 and you had 5 and 3 on your grid, you would go 5 minus 3 and then you would reach 2. And you have to reach the solutions in a certain number of numbers. So they'll have a solution that'll take 2 numbers, a solution that will be 3 numbers and 5 numbers. And you have to get, I think, 3 in each category, or 4 numbers, excuse me. It goes all the way up to 5. There's a free version, and I think the free version limits you in terms of the, you know, how difficult you can make it. And then if you pay like 99 cents, and I think it was an in-app purchase, you can sort of activate the whole shebang and get solutions that will require up to 5 numbers. But the tricky part where it gets tricky, because it seems simple, right? You just have to add or subtract up to a certain number solution. Where it gets tricky is you have to drag your finger across, sort of swipe style, if you've ever, you know, about like the swipe keyboard entry kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And so the numbers and the operators have to be adjacent to each other. And you also can't use the same number twice. And so you have to kind of figure out the right, not only the right solution, but you have to figure out sort of the right way to swipe across the grid so that you can arrive at that solution. And so it's really, really fun, and you can sort of build up levels, and it ends up being a lot trickier than you would think. And like I was saying, or I started to say earlier, some reviews were like, well, I wish it would have multiplication and division also in there. But I found just with the plus and minus, especially if I'm trying to get to like a solution that requires four or five numbers, it gets really tricky to kind of keep it in your head and to figure out, oh, I have to go. Because in some instances, you end up having to go in a certain direction. So you might know, okay, I got to use this number plus and that number minus that number plus that number to get my solution. But if you go in the wrong direction, you end up, you know, not arriving at the correct answer. So very interesting and a very fun game and inexpensive, and I'm enjoying it. So Quento.
Cool. And it's free. Well, there's a free version, I guess.
There's a free version. You can try it out. Like I said, I think it gives you access to all the levels. The one thing it will not let you do, I think you can only choose two-number and three-number solutions. And if you want to get the four and five-numbered required solutions, then you have to upgrade. And there's also a free play mode that you can get into if you don't want to have to kind of jump levels, if you just want to mess around with it. And I think that's built into the free version as well.
Cool. All right. So my pick this week is The Room.
Ah.
Didn't we pick that last week?
Did we?
Or the last time?
I don't think so.
Oh, you know where this was? I get my podcast all mixed up. It was the UK, the British Tech Network's Mac show. We all picked that. So,
oh, okay.
It's an awesome, awesome game.
Yeah, it's in the same category as Myst, and it's an iPad and iPhone game. That
separate versions, though. You have to buy for each.
Yeah, oddly, it is separate. And for on the iPhone, it's free to try, and then there's an in-app purchase to continue. Is it a dollar or two?
Yeah, I don't remember.
Well, it's $2 on the iPad, and if you have an iPad 2 or better, I would recommend just getting it on your iPad. But it's great either way. I have trouble getting into games because it just loses my attention pretty quickly if it doesn't have anything very engaging, and The Room has definitely been very engaging for me. I've been enjoying it. I haven't finished it. I've heard that it's short.
Yep.
I haven't gotten through it entirely, and I've been playing it for the last couple days, and it's only $2.
I did it in 3 hours.
Well, so you just, wow. You just mainlined the thing?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it is pretty cool. It's really fun. So it's The Room. It's $2 on the iPad and free to try on the iPhone.
Yeah, I think on the iPhone you have to have, there's a certain, you need to have a 4 or better.
I believe so, yeah.
So people know, yeah.
Yep.
It's beautiful. You know, it's one of these games. So the one big difference between like Myst and Riven, where like Myst, you're going around and getting different puzzles in sort of different areas. What's interesting about The Room is it's these kind of elaborate puzzle boxes. It's kind of how I've been describing it to people. So
yeah.
There's this box, and you kind of move around it, and there's little puzzles on the various sides and things like that. So things you have to solve, and you have to kind of go from one thing to the next, and it sort of builds up, and you're trying to, you know, uncover the clues in this box, and then it usually leads to, I think they call them chapters in The Room. So then you get to a next chapter, which is usually another sort of elaborate box or series of puzzles. And they're promising that they're going to put out more levels at some point. And they haven't made it clear, though, if it's going to be a whole new app. I would assume it's going to be a whole new app you have to buy, and that they're not just going to load additional chapters into the one, you know, the one that you already own. But if they did that, that would be awesome. But I'd like to see them continue developing these games. So I'm hoping, you know, since it's so inexpensive, that they will actually release it as a, maybe they can do it as an in-app purchase of additional levels, and I'd even pay for it because it is just beautifully done. The graphics and the sound, and It's amazing.
Yep. Yeah, and I did I tell you about that movie that I saw called The Room?
That's that horror movie, right?
No, it's not a horror movie. It's described as a black comedy. Basically, it's a movie you shouldn't waste your time trying to watch at all because it's one of the worst movies I've ever seen in my life. And I haven't seen the whole thing. I stopped it maybe 20 minutes in, and then I tried watching it again and stopped it again.
Oh, no.
So I didn't...
That's harsh.
Yeah, when I saw this game show up on Appler, it got really popular very fast. And I just didn't get it because I just had that bad taste in my mouth from that title, but I eventually checked it out when I saw it was free on the iPhone. So it's totally worth it. And speaking of Appler, I have very good news. We will be opening officially to the public in a public beta on Wednesday. So on what day is Wednesday? It is the 23rd. It'll be open officially, no invite code required. If you haven't tried it yet, you can still use the We Have Communicators invite code. It's friend of WHC. And go ahead and get your friends involved too and have them check it out. I just recently updated the site. There's a significant update with a lot of great new features and tweaks here and there that make stuff much nicer. There's a really great way, if you haven't already done it, there is a way to discover people who have similar opinions to your own. So it's, once we developed it, I just went to the similar people page and followed every single person on that page. And I've been great getting awesome recommendations after that. So if you go to the pull down menu and hit find people, you'll see that. And I believe if you want to have a private account as well, there's that in there too. So if you want people seeing all the apps that you own, and you can do that too.
So if you want to join a social network where you're not social, sort of like real life, yeah, the option is there.
Exactly. Yep. So with that, you can check us out on the web. The web? Why did I just say that? You can check us out. The website is wehavecommunicators.com. You can email us, feedback@wehavecommunicators.com, and advertising is provided by Backbeat Media, backbeatmedia.com. Jeff Gamet's on the web. On the net at the Mac Observer, macobserver.com. He's also at Jay Gamet on Twitter. And you can find the We Have Communicators mug at zazzle.com/Jay Gamet.
Ooh, I got to order a new one.
Everything tastes better in a We Have Communicators mug.
Because I broke mine. It's very sad.
Yeah, it's kind of sad.
Adam Christensen's at the MacCast, MacCast.com. He's at MacCast on Twitter. And member.maccast.com is the member show.
Yeah, and quick plug for, you know, Macworld's coming up, Macworld iWorld on January 30th through February 2nd, and I'm doing a live podcast on the show floor at 2:30 on Friday, February 1st, and I'm looking for people, if you're going to be coming to the show, I'm looking for people to interview, because what I want to do is I want to get the perspective of people who come to the show. I want to find out why you come, what kind of cool stuff you see, especially if you're a first-time Macworld attendee. I'd love to have you on. So I'm trying to schedule people for that. We've got to record for about an hour. And if you want to participate in that, just shoot me an email, maccast@gmail.com. Let me know you're going to be there. We'll get
That's
you on.
Fun.
Cool.
I should do a plug also, because I am doing a session called, what is it called? I believe it's called Overcoming iCloud. And that'll be on Friday afternoon. And if you
not
are,
during my podcast, I hope.
No, I don't think so. I think I'm at like 3 in the afternoon, 2
oh,
in the afternoon.
So you can come to my, well, see, I'm at 2:30.
Oh, I'll have to double check.
We could be competing.
Time zones mess me up.
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyhow, come to Macworld and hang out with us.
For sure.
Yeah.
I don't think I'll be there, unfortunately.
It won't be the same without you.
I know.
Maybe
but
I can. On the other hand, more booze for us.
Yeah, true. Maybe I'll do that thing that I've been doing in the last couple of years, where everybody pretends that I'm there and says, "Oh, you just missed him."
Yep.
Yeah. The funny thing is, people actually really believe that you're there.
Yeah.
I think it's mostly because of the iPhone Alley Twitter account.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about that. That is interesting.
Wait, iPhone Alley, is that still around even?
Occasionally.
Wow. I'm not trying to bag on them. I just really had no idea.
Yeah, I think they're hiring some writers.
Huh. Well, how about that?
Yeah. So, with that, you can follow me on Twitter at Michael Johnston, or you should follow the Appler Twitter. It's at Get Appler on Twitter, and that'll be updated regularly with stuff like new features and important things that I have to say. So, yeah, check it out. And with that, we'll see you next time on We Have Communicators.
Internet.
How are we going to communicate this?
The stylus.
We don't want to carry around a mouse, right? So what are we going to do? Oh, a stylus, right? We're going to use a stylus.